is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. That is an old jingle for a product that is arguably the most recognizable consumer product in the world, Coca-Cola. And my next guest has written the book about that drink and that company. His name is Mark Pendergrast. It's called For God, Country, and Coca-Cola. The original version of the book came out in 2000, but he has revised it twice. And the new third edition of the book is out this week in paperback. Mark, welcome to America Weekend.
Thanks for having me.
In this new version of the book, you say that you have gotten your hands on the original formula for Coca-Cola. Is that true?
Yes. It's an interesting formula because it's in the handwriting of Frank Robinson, who most people haven't heard of, but he's the guy who named Coca-Cola. It's his handwriting you see when you see it written out, Coca-Cola and the logo. And he manufactured it and advertised it in the early years, so it's quite a coup, I think, and it's a facsimile of it, so you can see it in his handwriting.
Okay, so how much cocaine do you need to make Coca-Cola in the original form?
Well, it has a formula for 36 gallons, and you need 15 quarts of fluid extract of coca. So that means you have to have enough coca leaf to make those 15 quarts. It doesn't say how much in that particular formula, although I've got another formula in the book also, which calls for, this is how to make French wine coca. Now, John Pemberton, who invented Coca-Cola in 1886, I mean, the history behind this is quite fascinating. He first invented, in 1884, a drink called French wine coca, which was an imitation of a then fabulously famous drink that we now have forgotten called Vin Mariani, Wine of Mariani. And it was a Bordeaux wine with an infusion of coca leaf that was drunk by everybody from President McKinley to Pope Leo. And Pemberton was just one of many people who copied it. But anyway, the formula I've got in the book calls for 10 pounds of coca leaf, and this is to make 38 gallons of the wine. So probably about 9.5 pounds of coca leaf went into 36 gallons of Coca-Cola. It would have made a drink that had a small amount of cocaine, much more caffeine than we're used to now, and the combination of them would have been pretty potent.
Okay, we know that cocaine, of course, is addictive. Was that amount of coca that was in the original one part of what has made people addicted to Coca-Cola for over a century now?
Probably not. You know, they took the cocaine out in 1903, which is another interesting story as to why. It had to do with racism. They thought that black men were drinking Coca-Cola, getting high on the cocaine, and raping white women.
Oh, my God.
Not true, but that was one of the prime reasons they took it out. Plus,
yeah.
Cocaine was getting a bad name by then. But I'm telling you, it had such a small amount in it. What was addictive was the caffeine, and it still is.
In the book, you also talk a little bit about the obesity problems that Coca-Cola is facing now, the charges that they are contributing to obesity, not just here in the country, but also globally. They, of course, have fought back against these claims, saying, hey, you know what, we're selling a lot of diet soda and water now. What's your take on this?
Well, you know, I think that they are correct. They're making it sound like they did this because they're good guys. They did it because they are trying to readjust to the new reality of the marketplace. The fact is, yes, if people drink a lot of sugary soft drinks, whether it's Coca-Cola or anything else, they're going to get fat, and it's really, the obesity epidemic is not just cosmetic. It's really, really killing us with diabetes and strokes and heart problems, you name it. So it's a big problem. Coke is adjusting. They're right. About a quarter of their drinks now are low-calorie or no-calorie, and more power to them. What I criticize them for is, and I'm sure many of your listeners will think this is a terrible, terrible idea, I think it would be a good idea to tax sugar-laden drinks because that will actually reduce consumption, and it would save us in terms of health and in terms of the amount we're paying for health care.
Do you think that people would stop drinking it if you were to, I mean, how much of a tax are you going to put on it?
Well, the heavier the tax, the more impact it will have. We know that from looking at the impact of smoking when you have high taxes on cigarettes. So the fact is it would work. The fact is also that Coca-Cola and all the other companies are fighting tooth and nail, and they've successfully killed every single tax initiative across the country because they lobby so hard against it with huge amounts of money. And they're very effective at saying, you know, these are the food police trying to, you know, tell you how to live. But the fact is, you know, Coca-Cola, with its incredibly sophisticated advertising, is also telling you how to live.
Yep. I'm opposed to it because I don't like the idea of government trying to change your behavior through the tax system. But I do agree with you with one major point that you make in this book, and I've seen you also writing a couple of op-eds about this recently, and that is Coca-Cola's influence on kids in this country. They say, of course, we're not going to be directly advertising to people under 12 years old, but you say that's a smokescreen, right?
Well, pretty much it is. Yeah, it's funny. If you go back, the government sued Coca-Cola in 1911 in large part because they were purveying a drink. They were advertising the drink directly to children, and it had caffeine in it. But, you know, Coca-Cola infiltrated schools in many different ways over the years. They invented the Santa Claus drinking Coca-Cola in order primarily to appeal to children, and they continue to try to do that indirectly. But very effectively, the polar bears that they use in their ads, so cute and cuddly, are also appealing to children.
And they are still in schools. They still have the logo in schools, even if they're not actually selling regular Coke in their machines. Or are they? Are there still vending machines in schools in America where kids can buy a regular Coke?
No, they're not. Coca-Cola was basically forced to take all of its sugary beverages out of schools in 2006. It was a deal brokered by former President Bill Clinton. But if they hadn't done that, there was a big threat of lawsuits. The same lawyers who had sued the tobacco companies were making noises about doing a class action lawsuit against Coca-Cola and Pepsi. So they caved, and of course now they're saying, oh, you know, we did this voluntarily. Well, they did do it voluntarily, strictly speaking. But anyway, the answer is no. And I don't have any problem with their logo being in schools. I don't have any problem with sugary Coca-Cola, for that matter. I do have a problem with it being in schools.
Yeah,
I think that's it.
I would tend to agree with you. I'm curious about just going back to the corporate side here, how their battle with Pepsi is going. Has Pepsi ever taken the lead globally?
No. Coca-Cola has trounced Pepsi globally and continues to do so. In the United States, the Pepsi per capita was creeping up on Coca-Cola for about 20 years, up until the flavor change of Coca-Cola, the famous faux pas they committed in 1985 when they came out with New Coke. And the reason they did that was because Pepsi had been creeping up on them all that time, and they did a blind taste test even within Coca-Cola and found out that even their own employees, about a little more than half of them, preferred Pepsi in blind taste tests. So they changed the formula, and as we all know, it was a disaster. Because they hadn't asked in their focus groups what would happen if they took away the original formula. And what would happen was people had a complete conniption. It was an interesting history lesson. It was an interesting reason to read this history of Coca-Cola, because it really shows you how a product can become embedded in people's psyches and in our culture to the point that any change in it, even if it may taste better, isn't going to work.
Does Coke beat Pepsi with other products, Minute Maid versus Tropicana, Dasani versus Aquafina, et cetera?
I don't think, you know, you're catching me off guard here. I don't think that Dasani has beat Aquafina. I think Minute Maid has surpassed Tropicana, but it's been a teeter-totter. I'm not altogether sure. It's really with the Coca-Cola products that they smash them. Like Pepsi's Mountain Dew is by far the leader in its category. And that's kind of, you know, they talk about first mover status with drinks. The first drink on the scene in a particular category usually has a big advantage.
Yeah, but when we talk about both of these companies, we've got to think of them not just as soda companies, but as beverage companies, because they are so far-reaching. It's a fascinating read. The book is called For God, Country, and Coca-Cola, now updated for its third edition and out this week in paperback. Mark Pendergrass, thanks so much for joining me here on America Weekend.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. We'd love to hear from you. 855-538-TALK is our phone number. That's 538-8255. The area code is 855. You can also email me, paul@americaweekend.com. And we're on Twitter and Facebook as well. From the Envision Radio Networks.
Paul Harris. America.